Minevay Gang Podcast for Saturday, January 30th, 2010. I'm Steve Borsch, and I'm on with the usual cast of characters, Tim Elliott.
Good morning.
Phil Wilson.
Good morning.
Graham Thickens.
Hello there.
And from San Francisco, a bleary-eyed iPad attendee, Julio Ojeda Zapata.
Good morning.
You actually sound pretty chipper for a guy that probably got up at 5 in the morning. But so we just got to jump in because of the big announcement on the iPad, and you were actually there. I've been in the audience way in the back during a Jobs keynote, but where were you? What was your experience like? And then we'll
Did he sign your breast? Did you have him sign your breast?
No. We were in the Yerba Buena Center for the Arts, which is a slightly more intimate venue than was typical at Macworld keynotes. Nevertheless, I was way in the back, but that wasn't too bad for this venue. And it was press. It was a press only event. And apparently, talking to people that have been to these press events in the past, apparently it was a mob scene by comparison. You know, people said there were more press there than they had ever seen before. Mm. People were it was almost a stampede going in. Reporters were literally fighting over seats. It was nuts.
Fighting over seats.
Were any punches thrown then? Or?
No. They were fighting it. You know, in a polite, terse manner. But nevertheless, they're saying, "Can I have the seat? No. I'm holding that for somebody. Oh, you can't hold that seat for somebody. Ah, come on." Yeah, that sort of thing.
Wow.
So I have a mental image of Walt Mossberg with the fists and taking on Andy Anatko or somebody. You know?
Yeah, exactly.
You know, I'm a short guy. Walt is shorter than me.
Oh yeah!
That was surprising. I didn't realize he was such a little guy.
Yeah, I sit next to him or near him at demo all the time, and I imagine nobody was hassling Walt. I want to know what kind of seat he got.
Oh, I'm sure he had a good one.
Right down in front. I saw a great video that Kara Swisher shot of him. Did you guys catch that on Ali Insider when he was talking to Jobs afterwards?
Yep, that was great.
That was pretty cool. It was like being there. It was like being a fly on the wall.
So anyway, Julio, tell us a little bit about, let's see. First of all, the general takeaway and the audience. I mean, I know they whip you into a fever frenzy there, but what was the general overall consensus when it first rolled out?
Well, when you're at these things, there's applause, you know, and you sort of scratch your head. You know, this is press. These are all supposed to be reporters. Why are they applauding? What's the applause all about? And I don't know if it's just, you know, salivating tech bloggers.
It's because they want to be invited back.
Or whether Apple has, you know, planted applauders in the audience. I don't know. That mystified me. You know, at one point they were demonstrating Pages, the new version of Pages that's meant to run on the iPad, and they wrapped some text around a giraffe neck and applause! Yay!
Wow. I love that.
And so, it's a little difficult to gauge the overall press consensus of the iPad based on reaction in the room, which seemed a little artificial, if I can use that word. But there was a lot of enthusiasm about the device, but it's a controversial device. I'll say that right out, because people were expecting a new technology. You know, the Macintosh GUI was a revolution. The new iPhone was a revolution. People were expecting something.
Drop jaw.
Well, partly or entirely new, you know, this is a new screen. It doesn't really make sense to put the iPhone interface on a bigger screen, does it? They're probably going to roll out an all-new interface. It's going to be this whole new thing. You know, it's going to be another revolution. And then when they pull this thing out, it's a iPhone with a glandular problem.
Steve just nailed it in the middle of December. I mean, he said this thing was going to be a big iPod Touch, which is what it is,
And, you know, I think that it's going to be where this thing is headed, not where it is right now. Just like the iPhone, if you'll recall, it is radically different product than it was when it was released 3 years ago. And so the evolution of both the iPhone and the iPad will be something that in 2-3 years time is going to be what everyone wanted right now, which is more akin to a MacBook than to an iPhone.
Well, you know, I hearken back to the debut of the iPhone, and this didn't really this was a very matter-of-fact sort of thing. It was almost an affirmation of all the information we'd already gotten about it, which was sort of disappointing because you hope that when you're reading leaks that the actual announcement is going to, you know, surprise you with something. And there really wasn't much of a surprise in any of the stuff. There was no great, you know, it's an iPod, it's a phone, it's an iPod, it's a phone. You know where I'm coming. You know, you didn't have that. You know, this was it's an iPad or it's an iPod Touch, but it's bigger. You know, there wasn't really much else out there.
Well, and you know, here was my reaction when I was watching this. I had read all the stuff about the patents and the touch screen that was supposedly like Braille, where it would raise up and you'd have a touch sensitive surface that would actually undulate as you touched objects. No, seriously. I mean, there's like a patent out there that Apple's got on that. And I thought, well,
I can only think of one thing that does that, but this is a different show.
I knew your head would go there right away. But anyway, all I kept thinking about was the experience I had with my bride and also her friend Mary. Mary had a Trio 750.
This is just going to get
weird. No, it's not. Mary had a Trio 750 and literally could not really do anything with it. She had to have an IT work on it. She was a VP of marketing at Briggs & Stratton in Milwaukee. And my wife always constantly needed hand-holding with everything. And I bought her a BlackBerry at one point, and she burst into tears because it was so complicated. And both of them need zero help with the iPhones. They each have an iPhone, don't need any help at all to do anything. And I kept thinking, oh my God, you know what? I mean, this... You know, people like us want to get in and hack around and make it do everything we want it to do. And yet that's not 90% of the humans out there. Would you guys agree with that?
Oh, yeah. I don't think this is aimed at the geek at all. I think this is a straight on consumer product. And it's the kind of the first Apple computer that I can see my mom using.
Mm-hmm. I don't know. I think that lack of physical keyboard is going to be a limit to a lot of what people want to do with this thing. I really believe that. It's I don't know. What does this offer that the Air doesn't offer as far as computing online?
Well, it's cheaper for one thing by a lot.
And by a lot, yes.
And it's a more simplistic environment, so it won't crash. It, you know, you won't have to low level format it every year and do all the things you have to do to a MacBook to keep it in, you know, good running order. So I think it's a completely different idea. It's disappointing to a lot of people because it's so much like a big iPhone right now or iPod Touch.
Yeah.
And I think that over time, this platform will develop into something very interesting and will be, in the end, revolutionary. But it just doesn't look that way right now.
I totally agree. Let me jump in with a comment I got from a friend of mine, Wade Beavers, the CEO of DoApp, which is quite an experienced mobile app developer. And I wanted to get his reaction right after the iPad was introduced, and much as Tim was referring to here, he sees it as a socialtainment device. You know, again, more of a consumer device, great for social interaction, family gaming, viewing content. You know, and we haven't even seen all the content deals that are coming yet. I mean, my God, we're not even going to be able to get one of these till late March, if that soon.
Well,
I have my request in.
you can't see anything in Flash, though.
It doesn't matter.
Oh, I disagree. I think it does matter.
Well, it hasn't mattered for the iPhone, and how many have been sold now?
Well, and I just
42 million?
I just sent an email to Randy Geis because he and I were tweeting about Flash and the resource intensive nature of Flash. And I sent him a link, and I'll try to find it for the show notes, about a guy who had done an analysis on Flash versus videos playing with the, you know, the HTML5 use in Google Chrome, and then playing these videos H.264. And this guy had numbers that showed 71% CPU utilization with a Flash video on his MacBook versus in the low 20s, I think it was 22 or 23% CPU utilization with the H.264 playback. So clearly, from a, I mean, when you look at everything Google's doing with really driving performance and making performance of your website part of PageRank, and all the SEO people, the search engine optimization people, are all jumping on this because, you know, if we each have our own site, the one that's optimized is the one that's going to be higher in the page rank. And so everything is about making the web faster and more efficient and less resource intensive. And that's why I don't think Flash will ever be there. It's as open as it is, it's still proprietary. And nobody really wants, everybody's driving toward web standards so that, you know, you're not locked in, or you don't have a vendor in Redmond doing an end run around everybody to make their browser work better on their platform. So I just don't think Flash is an issue.
I'm with you, and I'm with my friend Randy on that too. I just, yep.
So Julio, you actually were able to pick this thing up and touch it. And thanks for doing the Minivate thing. And I just thought it was hysterical that you put the I Julio post on there. I love that. That was great. But what did it feel like? And what was the resolution like? Those sorts of things.
Well, the device feels great. It feels like physically it looks and feels a bit like a keyboardless MacBook or a shrunken iMac screen. Mm-hmm. You know, take an iMac screen, kind of shrink it down to handheld format, and that's what you have physically in terms of the back and along the edges. That's fantastic. The front, you know, physically mimics the appearance of an iPhone. It's, you know, the home button is almost exactly the same. And so it's this weird physical hybrid, there's the bezel around the screen, which again is iMac-like, so it's an evolutionary product physically, and you know that works for me. It's fine because I'm a great admirer of Apple's physical product designs, and you know this fits right in with what it has done in the past, and I like that. It's great. I like it much better, you know, than holding a Nook or a Kindle or a netbook. Mm-hmm. So physically, it feels luxurious in the hand. The screen is it's an LCD screen, and there's nothing wrong with Apple's LCD screens. They're great. You know, it's LED backlit. That's terrific. I'm talking to you on a current generation MacBook with a similar screen technology, and I've been using it on this trip, and I've been thrilled. The only problem with that is this thing is being positioned as an ebook reader, and you know, as you know, most ebook readers use e-ink, which is highly readable outside. You know, if you're outside in the sun,
right?
Highly readable. LCD screens not so good for reading outside. And, you know, the very interesting thing, the thing I noticed right away is when the press was ushered into this big room that had Apple Store-like, you know, light tan tables with the iPads laid out on them. The room was very, very, very dark. And so I felt a little bit like they were playing a little trick on me. It wasn't a well lit room, which might not have been so impressive. So I'm a little dubious about how this thing is going to work as an ebook reader outdoors. But that said, you know, before my trip, I did an experiment for about a month. I read books only on the MacBook. I whipped through a whole bunch of science fiction trilogies on the MacBook, and I was, you know, expecting that eye strain that everybody talks about. It never had a problem. I expected, you know, to feel it. I expected it to feel awkward and clunky, and it didn't. You know, I'm hooked. You know, reading books on my computer in the morning when I'm eating my cornflakes, or at night when I have the laptop on my lap and I'm leaning up, you know, on the bed. It's great. I love it. I love it. Absolutely love it. And so it's a logical progression for me to read on this display that the iBook software is fantastic. It mimics an iPhone app you may have heard of called Classics. In fact, the iBook reader on the iPad is the direct ripoff of Classic.
Yeah, I read that. Yeah.
Well, that and Delicious Bookshelf.
Library.
Or Library, yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly. But the screen is fantastic, and the performance on this thing is wicked fast. Wicked fast. I pulled up Google Maps and sort of whipped around and looked for the Pioneer Press, looked for my house, pulled it up on Street View. Apple has its own chip in here, a chip that they developed internally. And the architecture on this thing apparently is first rate, because the performance, you know, it makes an iPhone feel horribly, horribly slow.
Well, you know, that's an interesting thing. On my own blog, iConnectDots.com, I ended up doing a post about Apple's A4 chip is the magic and is revolutionary. Mm-hmm. And, you know, when they bought PA Semi, I just remember reading John Sculley's book, Odyssey, you know, the Pepsi to Apple book that he wrote, where he talked about the future of computers. And one of the things he talked about at length, and this is in 1987, was that the big revolution in computing would be when companies could design and make their own chips and put their IP into the chips themselves, because then that'd be a true competitive differentiator. And I realized that's really what's happened here with this A4, because everybody Apple comes out with the iPhone and everybody starts to shift and tries to come out with something that is at least as good or better in many ways. And if everybody can buy the same chips, then it comes down to software and user interface design. But if you can do software and user interface design and you can do it with proprietary silicon, then you're going to stay, you know, two steps ahead of everybody forever, in theory.
Yeah, and so performance-wise, this thing is going to be wicked fast. And that is going to allow an entirely new generation of iPhone-like apps, but that are bigger, that do a lot more. You know, the core apps that Apple has on here for mail, for movies, for photos, for calendar, for notes, they were all revamped, expanded, made more elaborate and feature rich for the iPad. So that's sort of a glimpse into the future, because third party app developers are going to go nuts with this thing, because they have more real estate. They have that split screen feature that's available now. They have the greater performance. They have this gorgeous, absolutely gorgeous screen. So what we're going to see from third party developers is, in all likelihood, going to be that future revolution that I think Tim was referring to. It's all going to be in the hands of, this is basically a blank slate, if you'll pardon the expression. Third-party developers are going to create the revolution going forward. All iPhone apps run on this device now, but they look horrible. Facebook, the iPhone app for Facebook, went in fully enlarged on the iPad screen. It was awful, just absolutely awful. So that's going to change very soon.
Yeah, and Joe Hewitt, the developer of that app, did a great post, which I'll send for the show notes, about how excited he is about it. And also, the gamers are obviously, game developers are obviously hugely excited about the possibilities. And that's why a good portion of Steve Jobs' presentation was devoted to games.
Well, let me throw this out, because this seems to be at the heart of the iPhone versus Android mobile discussions, and is a lot of the reason why a lot of people, especially a lot of geeks, are slamming the iPad, and it's all about closed. And your article that you just sent out about, and I'll put this in the show notes too, from Bill Heyman at Code Morphic, where, you know, he's already developing for the iPad, and he really, this is a pretty good argument for the nature of the closed ecosystem as it is now. But what do you guys think? I mean, Phil, you're a guy that thinks a lot about ways that platforms like this can take off. What are your thoughts about closed versus open?
Well, I don't know. I think it all comes down to what they deliver. I always try to look at what the end user and the average guy that uses it, because you pointed that out, you know, early on in the cast today, Steve, that, you know, we're exceptions to the rule. I mean, I think it's a matter of what does it deliver to the user and what does it deliver? They don't care if it's open or closed. It's a matter of, you know, what does it do for me? And I guess I concern myself less with whether this is an open application, or, you know, anybody can develop for this, or whether it's closed and only certain people are allowed in. That walled garden that Bill refers to in his posts. It really comes down to what works and what doesn't work. People will pay for what works and what answers their problems or solves their problems. I think the right on in me is always like, yeah, we want to be able to let power to the people, let anybody develop for it. But that doesn't always lead to the greatest applications either.
Well, and you know, Bill Heyman talks about that specifically in his post about the closed aspect of it. And so does Joe Hewitt, the Facebook software engineer. No one likes this approval process they have to go through, but they can live with it. And they feel that it's worth it. You know, it's better than the alternative, you know. So,
any company or any producer of anything wants to, especially a company like Apple, they want to, maintain a very high quality image, and to not be able to approve the on your product goes completely counter to that. You have to be able to weigh in on what you think goes on the platform. It's very important to companies like Apple. Just as it's, being open is very important to companies like Google, because they are all about, we're going to make a lot of mistakes, you're going to see a lot of crap, but that's the way the whole open source concept works. You have to let in the good with the bad.
Well, yeah, and I think most good developers like Bill Heyman and like Duapp and whoever are going to develop for both platforms. There's no question about it. They aren't going to take sides on one versus the other, but they're very different approaches.
Can I step back just a little bit and less on the operating and that sort of stuff, and get your guys' view on the iPad? Now, we've talked about this iPad, and we've talked about it being a giant iPod Touch. And Tim, I agree with you that this is sort of the tip of the iceberg as to where it will go or where it can go. So my question is, should Apple have waited until there was something a little bit more earth-shattering, a little bit more, oh, wow, than just a big iPod Touch?
I don't think so. I think that they need to give developers 6 months, a year, to really fully exploit what this platform can bring. And, they've been holding off for years now on this tablet. So I don't see them, the advantage of them holding off any longer. I think it's, they're going to go for this. I think that the iPad will be different in 2 months when it's released than what they showed this week. There'll be some things addressed in the software that will probably make it better. And then by the end of the year, we're going to see, the camera, the front-facing camera put on for video conferencing and other stuff that people have criticized.
So why not wait and do that right now rather than roll out when it, with the front-facing camera and all the bells and whistles, rather than just say, okay, well, we took the iPod Touch and we blew it up. Here it is.
I think it's all about initial price points, and based on sales, you can then get better prices on components, and as things scale, you can drive the cost down. I mean, that's the whole nature.
Well,
now,
wait a minute, driving the cost down with Apple? How are you going to do that?
Yeah, well, especially when
it happened with iPhone. You bring up a good point, Steve. iPhone really didn't take off until that first price reduction. And the analysts have commented on this, and they fully expect that the iPad will go through that same natural occurrence.
Right. Well, so, and you know, and here was what was interesting, and I'm going to put this particular slide in the show notes or a link to this presentation. Mary Meeker gave her big presentation at the Web 2.0 Summit, and it was really a mobile presentation. And on slide 38 of the recap, there's also a 500 slide deck, but on slide 38, she had a slide that showed the Apple iPhone and iTouch were the fastest ramp of any hardware device ever introduced. Went in 10 quarters, that was the measurement. Looked at the iPod, the RIM BlackBerry, the Sony PSP, Nintendo, and iPhone, iPod Touch, and over a 10-quarter period since they launched, and the iPhone, iTouch, 57 million in the first 10 quarters were sold. And so, you know, open it versus closed, price points, whatever, it clearly was the accelerant, and it worked. And I look at this device and I look at the behavior of people now watching internet-based television, controlling devices in their houses. And I know, again, this is not the super mainstream, but, even look at the infrastructure stuff that Apple's had with the Apple Airport Extreme and those Airport Expresses, which allow you to stream music through your house. And, you know, you can set up a wireless distribution system, it's not too big of a stretch to see them getting into home automation products and other things that are wireless that you can control with an iPad like this. So the market is already showing the need for a bridge device, and whether others will be able to do it also and maybe mitigate the potential explosion in growth will remain to be seen.
Okay, so let's look at it from the consumer standpoint, let's move beyond the Apple faithful. Let's talk about those people that are looking for something that really can either answer, you know, or solve a problem for them or provide a service for them. Do you think that list some of the things that you think this particular device satisfies in people?
I think for a book reader, I think it's going to be significant. I think that in educational markets, this is going to be a real game changer, where school districts are cutting back on IT and they can't afford more laptops. So, you know, having something that's half the price of a Mac entry level MacBook will be huge in schools. And I think that you're going to see just all levels of people start to use these things as a computing device for communication. And so that's why I think that this is going to evolve as a platform fairly significantly over the next year.
I'm kind of geeky, but at the same time, when I'm relaxing, I do a lot of things that, average folks do. I like to read ebooks. I've been kind of iffy on Kindles and such because, they're so limited. If I'm sitting on the couch, it's kind of nice to be reading a book, but it's kind of nice to also, right away switch to email or switch to Twitter. And, a lot of people do that with their laptops at home, and a lot of people are going to find it, quite interesting, quite enjoyable to do it with the iPad. I also watch a lot of video on an iPhone or iPod Touch. I really, really like to do that. I download podcasts, buy movies, TV shows, read them on the bus. As I'm commuting to work on the bus, I like to watch a video. This device is going to be great for that. And then when, average people want to hunker down and, bang out a bunch of emails to the relatives or something, You can stick this thing in a stand and use it with an external keyboard. And so there's a productivity workstation kind of a situation going here. So my bottom line is, with this device, I can relax on the couch or in bed, or I can sit down at my desk and get actual work done. So it's a very versatile device. If Apple had pulled a "we're not going to support external keyboards" thing the way with the iPad, the way they did with the they have with the iPhone, which is very disappointing, that would have been a complete deal breaker for me. But I can do just an absolute metric boatload of stuff with the iPad. Conferencing, like on my trip here, every night I have an appointment with my son to web chat with him, to video chat with him, which has been an absolute blast because he's just getting into that. He just got his Google Apps account and all of that, and so that's been fun. If I take my iPad on a trip, I can't web chat with my kid. Are you kidding me?
Yeah.
And so that's going to be a problem. And you know, people like Chuck Olson and Jason Barnett of the Uptake, they said that, you know, this device would have been a great you know, citizen journalism tool, content creation tool, you know, for like holding it up over an audience and, you know, getting video of Norm Coleman or whatever. And you can't do that with this device. It's very, very disappointing. And, you know, some of the rumors had the iPad with two cameras, you know, one inward, one outward. And that would have been rocking. That would have been amazing.
Yeah, but wait a minute. These guys are going to have their mobile phone in their pocket. So, you know, people aren't going to stop carrying iPhones or other camera phones just because they have an iPad.
I somewhat disagree. I always have review units of one sort or another. But if I were not a tech writer, I would absolutely not. Buy an iPhone, because I think the economics of cell phone ownership are completely ludicrous. I'm in a minority on this, but it's ridiculous. It's absolute the what you pay for phone service. It's absolutely ridiculous. So the logical leap for me is, okay, I won't get an iPhone. I'll get an iPod Touch. That has been my thinking until now. But me personally, you know, if I had the choice, iPhone, iPod Touch, iPad. Holy crap, iPad, definitely iPad, because if I'm not going to buy a cell phone and I want an iPhone-like device that lets me do a lot of other stuff, you know, in a slightly larger form factor, I can get a whole lot more done in a mobile scenario than I can an iPod Touch. Definitely, absolutely, definitely the iPad.
Well, yeah. And it was interesting because Rick Mann participated with some quotes in that article that I wrote yesterday. It was published Thursday at MinPost about the iPod introduction, and his take on this was the iPad provides the crossover device that we've talked about before. He and I have the instant on aspect, fast access to social networking sites, services, and content. Ability to navigate more intuitively, larger screen, and reasonable onboard keyboard. All these things are targeted to content consumption, and social interaction is part of that content. Although...
Yeah, it's just not portable enough, though. Your phone already does that.
Well, your phone does it to a degree, but it was interesting because there was... And I will have to try to find this site again, but I have the Mophi juice pack that my kids got me for my birthday that connects to my iPhone and gives me many, many extra hours of battery life, but it is a little bit thicker. And this article that I read about battery technology and how flat they can make it, we're talking about how we'll see when this thing ships that there will be little folios that you put the iPad in that will add, you know, maybe half an ounce, maybe an ounce to the weight, and will be a battery that will add maybe another 10 hours of life. You'll probably spend $100 for it or more, but it's going to be much easier to, you know, move things around and manipulate things and be participative in social sites and with, you know, with Twitter and so on and so forth.
Julio brings up a good point, though. For those of us who already have these expensive iPhones, when you add up what we spend over the course of a year for our data plans and text texting and everything else, and the, plus the original cost of the phone. I mean, now having another device in between our laptop and our iPhone, and we, you know, and we're going to want to get a data plan for that too. You know, it is a lot to expect, you know, of for most people.
But Apple did, you know, jump through exactly the right hoops. They made the iPad very portable. So this thing in my backpack is way more portable than a laptop, and it's way more affordable than a iPhone. And so I'm there. And so the portability's there. And then you can get the thing in Wi-Fi only if you want. And then you can layer in the AT&T 3G data access if you want. And what really appeals to me about that is it's not a plan. I think I equate a cell phone plan.
Right.
It's just indentured slavery. Forget it.
Yeah.
I'm not going there. These 3G plans are prepaid. I have a prepaid flip phone that, you know, I just stick minutes in wherever I want. This is similar. You prepay for the service as long as you want. If you're not satisfied with the quality of your connections, you cancel at any time.
Yep, that's beautiful. And the lowest plan is only $14.99 a month, right?
So Julio, did they brief you after the event on why they went with AT&T and just didn't make this a GSM or even maybe like Verizon CDMA version as well for the 3G?
I was disappointed in that they didn't have the Q&A sessions that they sometimes do, so there was none of that. I'm only going by what Steve Jobs, you know, said on stage. But my guess is Verizon is coming, and they're gonna have that announcement be as powerful as possible. Yeah, because now, you know, when they announce Verizon, they're gonna announce it for two classes of device, not one. So That's surely coming this year, but there was no hint of that today at the event.
Say, Julio, I'm dying to know if you got a look at is the keyboard dock stand thing, was that on display, or is that a future product that wasn't even really shown, or what?
No, the accessories were on display, and they're very, very nice. You know, what I would do with an iPad is get the stand that doesn't have the built-in keyboard. You may remember when Palm devices were popular, there was this combination keyboard stand deal with the folding keyboard. Remember those?
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yeah. Sure. Yeah.
So this is a similar scenario. There's a combination keyboard dock, all-in-one accessory. You stick the iPad in there and start typing. That may be a little bit of a problem because you're kind of scrunched up against the iPad. So I'm not sure that necessarily works for me. But there's a stand that doesn't have the keyboard. It's just a little stand. You stick the iPad in there, and then the Bluetooth, the compact Bluetooth Apple wireless keyboard that many people already have will work just fine with this device. And so I have one of those keyboards at the office that I'm using with an iMac right now, and that'll work with the iPad just absolutely fine. And so you can stick that in your bag. You can stick the iPad in your bag, the keyboard in your bag, and it's a fantastic workstation scenario on the road. But then you might ask me, okay, if you're going to stick a keyboard and the iPad in your bag, why not just take a laptop? My response to that is, if in your hotel room, you're at your desk working, but then you want to play, you put the keyboard aside, and you can either keep the iPad in the stand and lean back and watch some video, or you know, go into your bed and read a book. And so you have different modalities when you're traveling that you don't have with a laptop.
Yeah, one of the things that I did read, which is the way I probably will use this, is the case that comes with it has a little stand, and then it will work with the Bluetooth keyboard that Apple sells. Mm-hmm. So that would make it, to me, a lot more of a portable solution than the dock.
Yeah, interesting.
Julio, and I don't know if they even covered this, but there's a 3.5 millimeter jack in there, obviously, for headphones, and there's a built-in microphone. Do you know, is it like the iPhone iPod Touch, where you can buy a headset that has a built-in microphone and it will function through that headphone jack?
I don't know. I don't have that absolutely confirmed, but I'd be shocked if that didn't work.
I would too. And the reason I asked the question was, Apple's opened up voice over IP on 3G. And so Skype hasn't updated their app yet, but yesterday I used Fring and I logged into my Skype app through Fring, and lo and behold, it works and it's perfect. Now, granted, mm-hmm. receiving calls means I have to have the app open because it's not multitasking the iPhone, and neither is the iPad. So and without push technology built in to fire up the app if you get a call, it's just really not practical. But to be able to make outbound calls with iCall or with Skype, I think over the 3G data connection is really fascinating. If you think, well, geez, now I could have an iPad, I could pay that data connection fee every month and use it as a mobile phone.
And anybody can go grab that Fring app right now too.
Sure.
Correct?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, I use Skype on my iPod Touch, and it works great. Of course, that's over Wi-Fi, but I would imagine that's going to work over the 3G connection built into the iPad too.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. So I think that's fascinating. So who knows where this might end up? You know, it's the old adage that at some point long distance will be free. Well, at some point voice will be free because it's just not going to be worth 30 or 40 or 50 bucks a month, whatever we pay to do voice.
Hey, Tim and I only pay 10 bucks a month for our lines at home because of T-Mobile at home, right, Tim?
Yeah, absolutely, yeah.
Graham, are you playing Twister with someone?
Yes, it was my chair. I was rolling on my chair and twisting in it too. I get twitchy when we get into these discussions. I can't help myself.
All right, okay. Oh, man. Well, is there anything, Julio, that was a big surprise? I mean, was iWork a big surprise?
Well, as I understand it, here's what I thought kind of intriguing. iWork is not this little cardboard box with a disc that you buy anymore, apparently. If I understand this correctly, it's basically an iPhone app. It's you pay 10 bucks for each of the modules and you on the App Store and off you go. So I thought that was intriguing. Productivity software as a iPhone-like app. I thought that was very, very intriguing.
Yeah, and that jumped right out at me too. I thought, whoa, what is this?
Yeah. So, but it makes sense, and it's amazing. Again, it's amazing what you can do within an app on this larger screen with an app that has been, turbocharged for this faster, bigger device. It's very computer-like. If you're in Pages or iWork, Numbers or Keynote, it's you can't believe how much stuff you can do and how much information you can see in what is essentially an enlarged iPod Touch. So again, third-party developers are going to go to town with this thing. The thing that might feel limiting for me is the lack of multitasking. Like right now, I'm a multitasker extraordinaire. Right now, while I'm talking with you on my Twitter and I'm checking my my RSS feeds.
Hey, pay attention.
You too, huh?
And Graham's answering the phone, or that's Phil. I don't know.
That's not me.
That's actually me.
And that's and that multitasking scenario is absolutely not possible with the iPad. So if I had an iPad on this trip instead of a MacBook, I might feel a little limited, a little constrained.
Did they show, and I'm asking this question based on what you just said, because when I think about Keynote and the sorts of work and things that I create in Keynote presentations, and I actually use it to make videos, to make high def pieces that go into videos and so forth, and screencast. I need a mouse because I need that level of precision often. Not pixel level precision certainly, but I need to be able to manipulate things at a very finite level, a very fine level. So, is there any option like that? I mean, because, you know, I saw Phil moving his mouse around, or I guess his big finger, and that was about it.
Yeah, I hope Apple doesn't make me use an external keyboard, but then reach over with my finger to manipulate things. And I'm assuming they'll provide, you know, wireless mouse support, but I don't have that confirmed. And there's no USB ports; you can't plug in a mouse.
Yeah. Well, there's some kind of USB capability if you dock it, but the other part was that a lot of people didn't realize was that the most of the management of it is going to be like the iPhone, where you can do a lot of things, but if you really want to manage and move the icons around, things like that, you need to connect it to a computer.
Yep.
Okay.
Yeah, it's a big iPhone.
It is a big iPhone.
And well, I find the like the home screen on the iPad a little disconcerting, because those iPhone like apps are lost in all that space, and then towards the bottom there's a dock that is 3D. It's a sort of a 3D dock similar to Mac OS X, and so it's just kind of this weird mushed together interface that is sort of a combination of Mac and iPad. It doesn't have a personality of its own. That's one thing that's bothering me. It just doesn't have a personality of its own. And it's possible Apple may rectify that between now and release.
Yeah. Well, it certainly sparked a heck of a lot of conversations. I was just stunned to go into TechMeme and see that TechMeme Thursday and Friday was almost all iPad. I mean, like every discussion.
And almost everything was negative or
a lot of negative stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. It seems like the geek reaction has been muted. There's been a few voices here and there. Gruber was uncharacteristically positive on it.
Yeah.
Most people, the entire Engadget writing staff posted an editorial where they all have problems, major problems with this.
Yeah.
So I think that it's not where it's going to be. It's where it's going. And I think where it's going is significant, and it will be a game changer. It will not be like Apple TV, where it's some side business and kind of dies.
Yeah, I would agree.
Totally agree, Tim. And I would point out that those media outlets like Engadget live for controversy. So they're always going to do that. They're trying to attract eyeballs and page views and advertisers. So naturally, they're going to have a field day with the controversy. You know, that's their thing.
I love being online with all you Apple freaks.
Thank you, Phil.
Thank you. It's like everything's fine. Everything's great. Everything's wonderful.
Yeah, it is.
It's all media hype.
Well, but let's ask a guy whose paycheck comes from a media company and also is an author of a book on Twitter. Twitter means business. Let me ask you, Julio, about your thoughts on, TwinCities.com, the Pi Press, your book, those sorts of things being delivered on a device like this, and what your gut tells you might be the opportunity there.
Well, for books, I really hope Amazon is frantically working on a revised version of its iPhone app, because there are some great possibilities for Amazon and heck, Sony and all the other companies that deliver iBooks to do some wonderful things on this screen. So my book is available in Amazon Kindle form. And so that's kind of exciting for me. And Apple has provided its iBook store. I don't like the name, but the iBook store is going to be kind of a big deal. And so it's obvious at this point that the iPad is potentially a Kindle killer. The Kindle DX, the big Kindle DX, is dead in the water. That big Q tablet intended for businesses is dead in the water, because if a business executive has to choose this between this big, black and white, horribly expensive thing and the iPad, forget it. It's obvious what they're going to buy. So that's dead, absolutely dead. As far as newspapers and magazines, there was a Sports Illustrated demo. There was a New York Times app demo. And so there's sort of a glimmer of what's possible for media companies, but there are missing pieces. We either need media companies themselves to do some fairly aggressive things on this platform, or we need Apple, as has been rumored for a long time. We need Apple to create another online store, or to extrapolate from its iBook store, a way for magazines and newspapers to peddle their wares in as songs and apps and books are being peddled on this device. There's a lot of potential for that sort of thing, and if it makes alliances, you know, with Gannett and McClatchy and Media News Group, and sort of gets their content on here, if they do that, it's going to be huge. It's going to be absolutely huge. Yeah. And so I'm hoping that happens.
Well, have you ever used Stanza on the iPhone or iPod Touch?
Yeah, I've used them all.
Yeah. Okay. So Stanza is my own personal favorite because it's nice to be able to make the text any size and be able to flip the pages and so on. And I've been reading some of Cory Doctorow's books on here. I've got Crap Hound and Down and Out in the Magic Kingdom, Little Brother Makers. I don't want to read on this thing, the iPhone. I mean, I got to be really hard up to sit down and try to read a book on this thing. And I can get a little bit of a sense of whether I like it or not and then go buy the book. But I keep thinking about the fact that Amazon bought Stanza last year. And even at that time, it seemed obvious to me that they were doing it as a hedge against this iPad device that everybody knew was coming at some point. And I'm just wondering about what they'll deliver. And the interesting thing about Stanza is the access to all the Project Gutenberg stuff, all of the essentially free content, and whether or not that's going to survive any new launch from Amazon.
If you look at Amazon's business model and even the name Kindle, I mean, they wanted to start a digital infrastructure. They wanted other people to develop devices to read Amazon content. So I think, there will be an optimized Kindle app. They may do something with Stanza as well that will look great on this iPad. And then they're going to be selling books. Digital books for this thing.
Right, right.
Yeah, but people are going to have two choices for what they're going to pay for a book. So Apple and Amazon are definitely heading for a battle. There's a piece in the Wall Street Journal today, Apple and Amazon square off. I'll send you the link, and it talks about this very thing.
Interesting. Well, it's definitely going to be intriguing to watch this all play out. You know, on a personal basis with our business, we do 7 ebooks a year that are full color and fairly large and robust and thinking, yeah, it's going to take a while before the critical mass of iPads get out there, but it's a new delivery vehicle. And especially if there's not necessarily DRM, but there's a way for us to ensure that we actually get paid for the content, because we're so small that if somebody's, if we lose 10 sales, that's a few thousand dollars, and that is pretty meaningful to us. So it'll be interesting. And same for you, Julio. If you've had an ebook, for Twitter's Means Business that 1 out of 10 people stuck up on Pirate Bay, and all of a sudden everybody's got it and nobody's buying it. That hurts.
Yeah.
Unless you're Stephen King, and then you can afford to have a few, I suppose, ripped off. But
say one thing I was going to say about the magazines. Condé Nast has already come out apparently and said, or Apple did, that we can expect to see versions of some of their magazines on the iPad when it comes out in March. So I'm looking forward to Wired on the iPad.
That'll be awesome.
That may be the first thing I open up when I get mine. And I was wishing I could get mine in time before I go to the demo conference on March 21st, but I'm not holding out much hope. I'm thinking, maybe they'll start selling them, delivering them about very end of March,
Well, you could do what Stephen Colbert did.
What did he do
on TV? Give me an iPad. No, he's Give me an iPad. He was doing the same thing with the iPhone, and I think somebody finally gave him one, but pretty humorous.
Did you see the Pee Wee Herman thing on the iPad?
No.
Oh, yeah. Pee Wee was very excited about getting his iPad. He used it to serve drinks. Okay. You ought to take a look. Go ahead and Google.
All right.
I think it's in Funny or Die.
And then that picture you sent him, the iPad Nano.
Yeah, we all have them.
Yeah.
We already have one.
Yeah, I don't. Yo, you guys do, but I don't. My son does.
I'm gonna put that up somewhere. All right.
Hey, do you guys have any thoughts on women being kind of pissed off about the name iPad sounding like a feminine hygiene product?
Oh, that's
yes. Yeah, a lot of women are like, "What? What were you thinking?" And somebody, I'm trying to remember who it was that tweeted about this locally. A woman that's in the social media breakfast that I follow, and she said the only thing missing are wings. on the iPad. Yeah. Oh man. But yeah, I mean it's
so anyway, guys. In the Sunday paper, which is out in early edition today, I did a battery of interviews with Minnesota Connected technology and media experts in various fields. I started getting their view of the. Of the iPad and, you know, in gaming and app development and so forth. So that's the big business spread in the Sunday paper. So on the Sunday Pioneer Press, so check that out.
Yeah. Sounds great. Well, good. Well, gentlemen, thank you so much, Julio, especially you for getting up so early out there in California.
Yeah, no problem.
Yeah. It was fun following you out there, Julio.
Oh, wait a second. Before we go, tell us about meeting Leo.
Oh yeah, I met him briefly. He and I were standing in line, and Leo Laporte already he and I already kind of know each other because I've been on Twitter, and I've interviewed him multiple times for the Pioneer Press article. So we kind of know each other. But I'm a salivating, slobbering Leo Laporte fanboy. I'm not embarrassed to admit that, and shaking his hand was a thrill, absolute thrill. Also ran into Andy Anatko. I interviewed him. I did a little video interview with my flip camera. Love Andy. About 2 years ago, I was at Macworld, and sometimes I'm a crusty character, and I'll tell you about the circumstances some other time. But just in briefly, I was rude to Andy Anatko, and I always regretted that. Deeply, and I always wish, you know, I had the chances to be with him physically to apologize, and I got that chance. I shook his hand. I said, Andy, I was rude to you once, and I've always wanted to apologize. I'm sorry. And I got that chance, and so, you know, my conscience feels better now.
Did he look at you and go, who the hell are you? I don't remember.
You would be
No, Andy is a gentleman, and he said, "I assure you, sir, it has been long forgotten." I think those were his exact words.
Oh, that's great.
That's a great way to say, "I have no idea who you are and what you did."
You talked to me?
Exactly. Well, as long as he didn't roll up his sleeves and there's like slash marks on his wrists, you know, saying, and then I was saved at the last minute. See what you did to me.
And there's a CNET. A personality called Natalie Del Conte. I don't know if you.
Yes.
Oh, of course.
Yes.
Natalie Del Conte is of Puerto Rican extraction, so she and I are Twitter using Puerto Ricans.
Mm-hmm.
And I met Natalie Del Conte, and I had my picture taken with Natalie Del Conte. The trip is now worth it. You know, I can now justify the expense and the effort of this trip. I had my picture taken with Natalie Del Conte. I'm a happy man.
So I noticed that on your posterous, yeah. And I was just going to ask Julio, how did your wife feel about that?
Yeah.
Well, you know, I was debating, you know, should I ask Natalie Conte to have my picture taken with her? Is that going to come off as creepy? You know, I sort of debated that, and I did it in, you know, the most gentlemanly fashion possible. So.
Excellent.
Well, I'm glad you could do that. That's good. The rest of us on
the
other
hand. So when you do to come back, Julio.
Well, yesterday I spent the whole day at the Googleplex. Maybe we can do another show on that. But that was fun. Then I went to, I made a pilgrimage to the Apple Company store and bought some tchotchkes for my son. And then today I'm going to the Computer History Museum. I'm, you know, having lunch with my publisher. And then I'm going to do a kind of a nerd hit parade. If you're a nerd and you're in Silicon Valley, you know, what are nerdy places you should go to? And I'm going to probably do a travel piece for the Pioneer Press about that. So I'm going to hit a couple of fry stores. And
yeah, Fry's in Palo Alto. That's the place, man.
Oh, I love that place.
Yeah, right near Stanford.
Yep. There's a computer parts store in Palo Alto as well that is quite famous.
Well, what is it called?
I'll have to Google it for you, and I'll just email it to you.
Okay, great.
But it's where all the local geeks go, apparently.
Right in downtown Palo Alto, probably.
Yeah.
I see you've also posted Hitler's response to the iPad on your posters.
That's absolutely hilarious.
I'll tell you what, that meme has been milked.
Right.
Oh, man.
But strangely, it never gets old.
I know.
It never gets old. Yeah. All right. With that, go out and enjoy some sunshine. Will you guys get some vitamin D?
Yeah,
yes,
really.
Yes, sir.
All right. Thanks again, and thanks.
Hey, thanks Julio.
Yeah, no problem.
Travel safe.
Yeah, thanks.
Have a great weekend.
See you guys.
Bye-bye.
Yep.